Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Vedanta Shri Vasini Bhavanda Kandiya. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Ram Hare Hare. Yesterday we were discussing about Sadhu Sangha, Swajatiya and Susnigda, and the principle, the fourth principle of devotion, Sadhu Vartmana Vartmanam, follow in the footsteps of the saintly people. So the actual sadhu sangha means to hear from the sadhus about Krishna and to see how that sadhu is following the process of bhakti. That's called sadhu vartman, the path of the sadhus. And try to follow him internally and externally. When we really get sadhu sangha, then the result of that sadhu sangha will be that we'll, by that influence, we will practice limbs of devotion with great attachment. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. Because that's what they're doing. Sadhu sangha. Sadhus are absorbed in hearing and chanting and remembering Krishna. So if we get their association, that's like, for example, if someone has a disease, a very contagious disease, and if we go and we associate intimately with them, and maybe eat some of their food or drink some of their water or embrace them or kiss them or whatever, you know, like it's our mother or something. Then by that contact, the influence of that contact, we will, if our resistance is down or weak, then we will get that disease. So this is what happens: is sadhus have a Krishna conception. That's their disease. they have attachment to Krishna. So, and we want that attachment. That's what we want from them. As we mentioned yesterday, we said the, what was that definition? It was really nice. Yeah, what is the meaning of sadhu sangha? By sadhu sangha, one awakens affection towards Hari. So this, because the sadhus have affection, and if we associate with them, that disease of affection will come into our heart, at least in drops, and will begin to feel some affection more and more. So in this further elaboration, it's telling that if we really get sadhu sangha, then by their influence we will practice the limbs of devotion. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam. Many people, Jai Ho Maharaj Ki Jai Ho. Many people, city people in India, pious people, they say, oh, last weekend on Sunday, Sunday we had the day off, we went to Haridwar, we went to Vrindavan, we met some sadhus. We had sadhu sangha. Gotcha. So what is the result of that sadhu sangha? No, same result. I go to work on Monday and I saw them and they gave me some prasad, some puri and halava, and I gave a donation and I offered pranams and they said mangalam bhavatu. And Ayushman Bhavatu. And then I came back. But did you start chanting Hare Krishna or start reading Bhagavatam or start serving Krishna? Or if you already were, did you do that with more attachment or more enthusiasm or more conviction or more realization or more feelings or more understanding? So generally the answer to this line of questioning will be a negative. Well, no. So then, according to our strict definition here, that person, although well-intended and fortunate to have the darshan of the sadhu and the prasad, and coming to the holy dham, but they did not really get sadhu sangha. Either he was not sujati or he was not susnigda. So this is nice definition. If one says here that when we get real sadhu sangha, because we may meet so many people dressed as sadhus also. Like people go to the temples and they meet so many maharajas. In India, everyone in saffron is a maharaj. Oh, I met so many maharajas there. But I don't know, they were all drinking thumbs up and reading newspaper. They were all talking, I saw all these Indian maharajas, they were talking to these Western girls. And when I go, when I'm in Delhi, they tell me they come to Vrindavan temple. I see them standing around, they're all talking to Western girls, they're the maharajas. Those brahmacharis in saffron. And they even meet some of them. So, I met a sadhu, I had sadhu sangha. But by that influence, do we begin practicing? So obviously, this is the Nam Namakali Bahudha Nicha Sarva Shaktis is incorporating this principle of devotion, sadhu sangha and bhajana kriya anatta nivritti. So if we have sadhus, then we also have non-sadhus. So this is called asat sangha, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said this is the behavior of Vaishnava, a Vaishnavachara, the achara of Vaishnava is to tiag or to give up or to avoid accepting the thinking and feeling and desiring of a materialistic person. That should be rejected. Asat sangha tiag e Vaishnavachara. Doesn't mean that we don't have material friends or materialistic friends, relatives, brothers, sisters, and in the workplace we may meet so many people and ride in the bus together, ride in the car together, or work side by side in the office, because most people, aside from a handful of people, most people are married and working and practicing bhakti also. So they think, that means I can't talk to anyone in the office. Asat sangha tyag, I have to avoid non-devotees. I can't talk to them. I make it infected. Of course, it's not like that. But what it really means, asat sangha, is when one accepts the conceptions or ideas or thinking or feeling of a materialistic person. And of course, by being with one repeatedly in the workplace or in home or whatever, it is often very difficult to avoid accepting their way of thinking or their way of feeling, especially if your wife is completely materialistic. Or your husband, well, let's say the wife, because she's usually cooking in an Indian household, and she's very materialistic and you're eating her food, then your mind will also become materialistic. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is telling Raghunath Das Goswami, if one eats food cooked by a materialistic person, his mind will become wicked. And with a wicked mind, we cannot remember Krishna. Krishna Smaran Bina. We will not be able to remember Krishna by eating food prepared by a materialistic person. So, for sadhu sangha to be effective, if we do get sadhu sangha, if we want to be effective, then we must give up all material association, which is known as kusanga. Like satsang is eternal, associating with the good or eternal, and ku means bad. Especially give up the bad of, and this is an interesting, it's a very interesting definition of bad association. Hear this. We must give up all material association. We especially have to give up the bad association of our materialistic mentality. This is very clever. We think the bad guys are outside. I'm a good guy. I'm initiated. I'm a good guy. I'm a Krishna Das. But the bad guys are the non-initiated, or the postman and the mailman, you know, the telephone wala and the school teacher and my Hiranyakashipu father and Ravana uncle and like this. But actually, our materialistic mentality is the bad guy. So we should give up association with that mentality. And then there's these verses discuss this also. Which should we, if we have a choice between lions, tigers, crocodiles, and kusanga, which one should we choose? So kusanga means materialistic association or bad association. So the acharyas are saying you should choose any of the first three. Better association with lions in the daytime because they're diurnal animals, and nocturnal animals are tigers. So in the day you can embrace a tiger, I mean a lion. At night you can embrace a tiger, and then if you want to get, you know, go swimming, then you can embrace a crocodile. Because if you embrace a lion, a tiger, or a crocodile, there's no lasting harm. Because if you get eaten by the beast, you know, there's no lasting harm if you get. There's no long-lasting harm if. Even if you get eaten by the beast. You're a devotee, and then you go and you're chanting Hare Krishna, and then you go on your face in some lake somewhere in a tropical place, and you're swimming, and an alligator eats you, a crocodile eats you. It seems like a kind of a setback to your preaching program, because you're finished. But your bhakti's not finished, and you take another birth and continue. So, but if you associate with a materialistic person, you can go down. He can, your bhakti lata can become destroyed. Your body may continue to live and breathe and carry on. But by taking on their ideas and eating their foods, and all of a sudden you lose the taste. I want to stay by myself. I want to be by myself. I don't want to be with the devotees. I don't want to go to the temple. And we think that we're the doer of this, right? We think, oh yeah, we think I'm being very, very serious about my bhajan now. I'm going to do solitary bhajan and avoid all the devotees and avoid the temple. But actually, this is a reaction for our misbehavior, for our offenses to the name or to Krishna or the devotees. So Krishna is actually arranging to prevent us from the benign association of the temple and creating a mentality within us that it's our independent choice. So this can be, of course, very harmful, because this is what happens when we associate with materialistic people. We have all kinds of strange ideas and we think that they're really quite good. That's the proof that you've taken on the association of materialistic people, when you get upside down ideas about devotion and about bhakti. Better be eaten by a tiger than have that if that happen to you. But it says there is no long-lasting harm if we get eaten by a beast. But the association of lusty women or men, the desire for fame, wealth, or material desires can completely uproot our bhakti samskaras. This difficulty with the material association is that it seems very sweet externally. Sometimes it seems very sweet. Our relatives, our friends, and how's everything going, and all kinds of mundane talk and prajalpa, and then you go home and stay with your mother or father or whatever, and every day it's mundane talk, and every day and every day. And maybe it seems sweet, but it's dangerous. It's like a slow poison. Like sometimes it, like arsenic, for example, it slowly acts on the nervous system. So if you're drinking water like the Navadvipa water in West Bengal, it has the highest percentage of arsenic per ppm, or what it's called, than any water in the world. Because arsenic is a layer of rock. When you cut a cake in half, you have the different fillings, or, you know, maybe it was chocolate cake or whatever, carob cake and vanilla cake, and separated by different fillings. When you cut a slice of the earth, you have a vein of silver, a vein of gold, you have clay, you have topsoil, you have arsenic, different levels. So what's happened in Mayapur is, because of so much farming and rice growing and whatnot, they keep digging the wells they go deeper and deeper, and then they go through the clay and they go through different layers, and the arsenic layer is very close to the surface. It's running like this under the ground. So when they make all the borings, the borings go into the layer of go into the arsenic. So the water mixes, the arsenic comes up and mixes in the water. So this is, so anyone who drinks Navadvip water for 20, 25 years, they all get stones and very bad problems with health. That's what I was told by Sadadanya, who seems to know what's going on over there. He's been there for a while. So I suppose they have all kinds of adjustments for that now, water filter. Oh, yeah, that's what I was doing. The Brahmacharya is in the lotus building, collecting all these 5 or 6 cans, and one by one they get kind of sediment, you know, it settles out, and it's really good. Really tasty. And obviously, very spiritually and materially healthy. Just settles out, you know. And this is 3 days and five. You know, you have like 5 cans. You fill one, and you work on the 4th one. You know, by the time this one's empty, that one, you know, it just by just settles out. And you pour it through a cloth and a few other things if you want to do. Then you can even get more security if you want. Well, that's Krishna's arrangement, I guess. Everybody drink Ganga Jal. That's nice. So, slow poison. So that's like this materialistic association or materialistic people. They poison us slowly. So that's why Mahaprabhu says tyag. We should renounce and leave them as much as possible. Stay away from them. The relationship between sadhu sangha and shraddha. When actual faith or shraddha comes in the heart, we will become attached to sadhus. Because we will realize at that stage of advancement in spiritual life, we will realize that feelings for Krishna come into our hearts by association with sadhus. Without sadhu sangha, feelings for an attachment to Krishna fades away. We may have some self-generated feelings from last life or even from this life or from previous association with sadhus, some feelings and some attachment. But if we don't continue, and then at the same time we contact materialistic people or places or environments or foods, then that minute degree of attachment and feelings for Krishna will fade away. It's a very interesting point. That this first point is very significant. That if we want to measure how much we are actually improving in bhakti, how much our faith in Krishna is developing, we can measure by how much thirsty and eager and anxious we are to associate with saintly people. Because if you look historically at the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, they're always having sangha all the time. They're always meeting in sangha. They may go by themselves time to time, Teya Kadamba and Pavan Sarovar and Gokul and Kadamba Kandi and Uddhav Kyari and so many places they'll go, lonely places, very lonely places, far from the masses, far from any pandas or even civilized, you know, places. I mean, housing areas in the jungle and the forest and do bhajan, but then they'll come regularly, often after a week or two they'll again meet with devotees and hear Bhagavad. And so this is so important. As many devotees, when you meet someone, you ask them, say, who are you associating with? This is usually one of the questions. Yeah, what is your bhajan? Who are you associating with? Oh, nobody. I'm just staying at home and I go to work and I read Prabhupada's books and generate Krishna. So obviously it goes without mentioning that we're associating with Prabhupada and Shukadeva and Vishwanath and all the other acharyas and the commentaries of the books and the authors of the books, and that we're also associating with the personalities being depicted in the transcendental books. But that's understood. But even with all that, bhakti will still fade. Without the direct association with living, breathing sadhus. This is what the point is trying to be made here. It's essential to associate with pure Vaishnavas to upgrade our Shraddha. You know, it's a common word in modern times. You're in business class and you upgrade your ticket to first class, or you upgrade your hard drive or something or whatever. So to upgrade our Shraddha and to thicken our faith. Sambandha Gyan, in other words, under the knowledge of our relationship with Krishna, with the name, with this world, our service, what Krishna wants from us, so many different points. Sambandha Gyan will come by hearing Harikatha and doing kirtan with sadhus. The secret in this verse, nam nam akari bahuda, is sadhu sangha. When we associate with sadhus, it changes our hearts. We become fortunate. That's it. Because this is one of the first sentences of bhakti, is that one's life becomes very fortunate. So this bhakti is in the heart of the sadhus. And so when we associate with them, then the bhakti comes in our heart, and then we become fortunate. So this word Duradevam also points to sadhusanga. Because we are Duradevam, we're unfortunate because we don't have sadhusanga, and we're making, and Duradevam also means we continue to maintain aparats and offenses and anarthas because of the absence of sadhusanga. So Duradevam means sadhusanga and indicates sadhusanga. Duradevam mihi ajani nanaradaka. So when we get sadhusanga, we become fortunate, we become enlightened in bhakti, and we get free from offenses, we get free from anarthas, we start to recognize them. We maybe didn't even know about so many possibilities of offenses and anarthas. We were just stumbling along, we were like a bulldozer or something in construction. They have this big tractor with a big blade and big steel blade in front of it. And it goes, knocks down all the trees and clears all the land. It's called a bulldozer. In America, they call them bulldozer. I don't know what they call it in other countries. Scraper or something. I don't know. It has these big cat-like, they call it caterpillars, and big tracks like this. It goes on belts with little steel teeth on it. It's used in construction, highway construction, flattening and things. So we may be behaving like devotional bulldozers. Just knocking everything down in our sight and mowing over everything and pushing everything to the side with great speed and great power, and thinking that it's all very spiritual. Because we're plain, and the bottom line is we're actually foolish. We don't know about the 16 anarthas. But as they say, ignorance of the law is no excuse. We are to become educated and to learn the ways and wherefores of devotional practice and behave accordingly. We will become fortunate and Duradevam will go away. We will become humble, respectful, and sincere about devotional service. Without sadhusanga, we think we are so qualified. I'm a very good devotee. I'm giving all the classes. I know all the verses. I'm a big devotee. And then you go into some sangha where they're having a 3-day mela on Rupa Goswami, and then somehow you're asked to sit there on the dais and asked to speak. And before you speak, they call somebody out from the kitchen, some brahmachari who's washing pots all day. And then he gets up and speaks, and even there's a timer. Everyone gets 5-10 minutes, and the convener of this assembly turns a timer. And then it goes ding after 10 minutes. So there's many, you know, people to speak. So the brahmacharis very enthusiastically, this verse and that verse, what Rupa Goswami came to teach, and this and that. And everyone's like, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm supposed to speak next. Because the convener of this conference said, okay, after he speaks, then you'll speak. And he's standing up, he just called out from the kitchen. We're all sitting on the dais of the sannyasis on the platform. A little more, you know, regard and whatnot. So then the bell goes ding, and he looks at the Maharaj, and he just keeps going. Maharaj, time's up, and then he turned the timer again. Another gave another 10 minutes. You've already finished 10 minutes. So he went for about 15 minutes, and then Maharaj said, "Okay, stop." He stopped. He was so enthusiastic to quote up a Rupa Goswami and so many beautiful points. And then he says, stop, and everybody's laughing and clapping and everything. So then he's, "Oh, Maharaj, sorry. He goes back and went back to wash the pots. And then they called on me to speak. I was like, I felt like a fly amongst elephants when the four-headed Brahma went to Dwarka, and he thought he was so big, and then Krishna called all the Brahmas from all the universes to come and pay obeisances at his feet with all their millions of heads and helmets. And then the four-headed Brahma was, I feel like a fly amongst elephants. This is in the 10th canto. So when we meet with sadhus and then we see and experience their realizations and their purity and their devotion and their sincerity and their learning, spiritual advancement, attachment to Krishna, then we have no other recourse than to bow our heads and bow our hearts and become very, very humble and, dasasmi. So this is why sadhu sangha is very conducive for bhajana kriya and then an arta nivritti, purification of the heart, goes on very quickly. It's so important, and because when you meet very, very advanced sadhus and you see how they live and how they move and how much regard they, "Oh Prabhu, please sit down, here's the asana, take some prasadam, here's some water." "Oh no, Maharaj," 95, 98 year old sannyasis running all around to take care of this mlecha and yavana that happened to step in to contaminate his holy kutir. But they don't have, because they're Gaudiya Vaishnavas, they don't have any of this kind of dualistic vision. They're just thinking, "Oh, the mercy, Mahaprabhu Kripa, Mahaprabhu, Nitai Kripa, Nitai Kripa, look right in my kutir, this is a living example of Jagai and Madai." Not even worse than Jagai and Madai were Brahmins by birth. I mean, they're Nadia Brahmins, they're not some Yankee mlecha. And so when you see that, when you actually see humility in action, and you see seva in action, and you see bhakti in action, it's overwhelming. That's what creates samskara. Once a bhakta in Delhi, senior devotees were serving. He asked a question once in a darshan. He said, "Maharaj, we're new devotees, and everyone's always telling us we should be humble and we should always serve the Vaishnavas, and of course that's all we do. They always have us doing so much service. But we never see any of the seniors. We never see any of the seniors, like, doesn't seem to act very humbly, and I never see them doing any service. They don't serve any other Vaishnavas. He's a new man." And then he said, "How can we as a new person pick up the idea to be humble? Pick up the idea to be humble and to serve others if we don't see any example of it, except all of us new recruits, youth form and new bhaktas, we're doing all the service. The seniors just seem to be receiving and enjoying like some kings." Asked me this question. So I tried to figure out an answer. This is the idea that we have to see. Seeing is believing. For most of us. And as we make a little more advancement, then we can have the faith to believe what we hear. But we have to actually see humility and pridelessness. And so when you're with sadhus and advanced devotees, you see how they interact, and they welcome each other, and they serve each other, and there's no false ego or one-upmanship, and one's talking about Krishna, and then the other one says, "Oh, I remember this thing about Krishna." "Oh yeah, really?" Then all attention goes to his description about Krishna. And then he says, then someone else says, "But there's another thing about that story, do you know?" "Oh no." Then all attention goes to him. Then he tells some other thing about that. And then that reminds the first person who started the conversation, "Oh, actually, Prabhupada said this. Oh, that's right, I remember that." And it goes on and on like this. And there's no ego bashing, there's no competition, there's no envy. It's just the waves of bhakti rise higher and higher and higher. And you're sitting there like a little mouse in a corner, watching all these cats at a convention or something. And you're saying, wow, look at this, it's beautiful. It's just the waves of Krishna Katha are rising higher and higher. And as they rise higher and higher, I'm feeling more and more ecstatic and more satisfied and cleansed and purified and enlightened. This is Sadhu Sangha. So when you've seen that or been there or experienced it, then you understand, oh, this is something transcendental. Because all of us, of course, have dealt in the social world of material society and social intercourse and conversations. There's so much. It's all one-upmanship and ego and so on. And you walk away from it not very, usually very thrilled or satisfied. Because Krishna is not the center. It's me as the center. And everyone is just waiting for an opportunity to establish the meanness. You know, that, okay, you did all that. Well, let's listen to what I did. And then the other person tolerates a little while, listens to what he did. And says, this is Maya Kata, Gramya Kata. No result and no success. Hare Krishna. Without Sadhu Sangha, we think we are so qualified and so advanced. But when we associate with advanced pure devotees, we can clearly see our own wretched condition and feel genuinely fallen and low. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, only in association with devotees can one realize his own worthlessness. That's a nice quote. Only in the association of devotees can one realize his own worthlessness. We should think, oh, my guru gave me Krishna's name, but I'm so miserable, ungrateful, and I'm making so many offenses. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it described that Uddhava thought, I'm Krishna's minister. I advise him, and I'm a very close friend of his. That's what Uddhava was thinking before he associated with advanced devotees. I'm a temple president. You know, ISKCON, whatever. I'm ISKCON guru, GVC, and then you happen to run into a few new bhaktas from the Gaudiya Math somewhere. Wow, how many shlokas, how many bhajans, how much, you know. And you start to crawl under the carpet, you know. That the bottle washer knows more than the Maha Mega guru. I mean, not that that's all the criterion for advancement is knowledge, but certainly one is awed when he meets some very young person and is extremely adept in all the ways and practices of Krishna consciousness. It does create some humility, no doubt. I feel like an old dog rather than some useless cow with no milk or something. Buddha was, I'm Krishna's minister. He always asks me for advice. I'm a very close friend. That was what he thought before he had association with advanced devotees. Who were those advanced devotees? The Gopi Brinda, the Gopis of Braja Gopis, the Gopis of Vrindavan, the group of Braja Gopis. After he met the Braja Gopis and he saw the high level of their praying, Uddhava felt ashamed. He realized that actually he had no love. And he thought, my love is like a mosquito. But the Braja Gopis' love for Krishna is as high as Mount Everest. That's what he thought. Uddhava felt that he had no love at all after he associated with the Braja Gopis. Then Uddhava prayed, Asamaho Charanareno, that's in, it's actually quoted in here. It's from 10th canto. Jiva Goswami, he's telling in his commentary, my legs are not working. We went on a parikrama of Govardhan. We started at 10:15 and we got 3 hours and 45 minutes because we wanted to get back in time and have something to eat before class. My legs are all stiff. You know? They're really stiff. I don't know what to do with them. You know, like... Yeah, it's like, you know, Charlie horse or something. You know, they get stiff, you know. I just stand up for a minute. Maybe I just keep walking around Govardhan. It's really, I'm getting old. Older. Because I only go around about every 2 weeks, I guess. Mm. Anyway, let's see what happens. You don't want to get, you know, stiff, you know, the muscle cramps. I don't know. Maybe I can't speak anymore. It's all like, you know, I can't.
The mineral? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not getting much diet. It's all the. I can't even eat, it's like frozen.
Yeah, tonight we make our pretty good laugh.
You did last night too, didn't
you? Well, we were supposed to, but our camp leader couldn't make it.
That's right.
He's in Bhajan.
That's good. Tonight's pratipat. We're supposed to do a pretty long pratipat. But everyone's celebrating today, so everyone's going out today. You know, this, yesterday we did Diwali.
Mm-hmm.
But Diwali ended today at 2:25.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Thanks. That's it. It's like, we call it Charlie horse.
Yeah.
I know what you call it. Australia over there. I just go to sleep. Okay, let me just see what I can do. Oh, it's really, anyway, maybe that's the end of class today. Soul is willing, but the flesh is weak. It's really too much painful. Like, you know, like a sciatica or something. Yeah, it's all in here. It's like here, right? They have a phrase in Hindi, they say, Ye Shariram Dukam Mandiram. This body is a temple of misery. Dukam. Ye Shariram Dukam Mandiram. Sharia means body. In Bengali, what do you say? Dehar? Oh, same. Oh, Sharira Vidija. Sharia, same word. Yeah, keep doing that, then maybe I don't think about it. Hare Krishna is a very unusual lecture. I never gave a lecture. It's kind of like Kripalu or something. When Kripalu gives a lecture, he lies down. He used to live opposite his ashram. His asan is like 7 feet long, and sometimes he lies down.
Oh,
he's real Kripalu. You know. He's one of the gurus of India, you know, famous personality, very much interesting. So this is, we're finding out, we're talking about sadhusanga and the value of sadhusanga and how being in sadhusanga we can understand our worthlessness and our wretched condition. So from different angles of vision, we're trying to encourage everyone, even from the topmost plane of the Nitya Parishaza Krishna, they realize, they get realizations when they take sadhusanga. So this Uddhava Mahashaya, as I was mentioning, Jiva Goswami, there are a group of prayers, about 6 prayers, that after staying in Vrindavan, Uddhava came from Mathura to deliver a letter to the gopis to try to placate them, because Krishna said he would be back in a few days when he went with Akura. But he didn't come back for some time. And Uddhava stayed anywhere from 2 months to 6 months to 10 months there are different statements about the length of his stay. But he stayed for several months in Vrindavan, so-called consoling the gopis, but actually he was in the school of Prem. He was getting education from them. And Jiva Goswami, in his purport of this section of Bhagavatam, he said that every day, while Uddhava was here in Vrindavan, he was reciting these prayers, which are, if you have a good memory, it might be nice to memorize these. I had attempted to do it one time, but I'm not very smart in that way. I wasn't able to do it. But this is 10th canto, 47th chapter, 61st verse. Asamho charna venadisham mahansnam vrindavane kim api gomalato shadinam yadushtya jam swajana marya patam chahitwa bijur makunda paravim shuttibir vimrigyam. Buddha said, Aho, the Vraja Devis have given up everything that is difficult to renounce, such as children, family, the path of chastity, and they have taken shelter of the path of prema bhakti to Sri Krishna that is eternally searched for by the Shrutis. My prayer is that in a future birth I may acquire a form among the bushes, creepers, and herbs of Sri Vrindavan that receive the dust of these gopis' feet. So this is the Goma Lata Oshadinam. Vrindavan ekim api goma lata oshadinam. The acharyas, they give very lengthy comments. So here he is, he's the advisor of Krishna. He's like his minister, friend, confidant. And now, and he thought he had lots of affection, love, and intimacy with Krishna. And after coming to Vrindavan and associating and seeing the Radharani speaking, seeing the Madanakya Mahabhava of Radharani, witnessing directly Radharani speaking in divine madness, Divya Mad, to the bumblebee, mistaking the bumblebee for Krishna at times, or the whole time, then he became totally overwhelmed and amazed. And then he thought, oh, and he didn't even, they say that he was so overcome by the intensity of their attachment and the depth of their love for Krishna, I didn't even pray to become a gopi. I mean, Lakshmi Devi, she's doing austerities in Vailran because she wants to become a gopi. She's attracted to Krishna, especially the Rasa dance, so she wants to become a gopi. But she never even had any association with the gopis, just attracted to the rasa dance and the beauty of Krishna, Lakshmi Devi. And Uddhava, he actually saw that Madanakya Mahabhava, Srimati Radharani, heard her Chitrajalpa, her mad speeches, Udgurna and Chitrajalpa. And then he thought, oh, I don't want to become a gopi. He didn't even pray to become an animal. Because Radharani and Krishna have pet animals, deer and parrots and baby elephant and dogs and different animals they have as pets, peacocks, swans. He didn't even pray for that. And he prayed just to be an insignificant creeper. And not even on the main highway. Not even on the interstate highway. He said, let me be on the hither of the path. And then he wanted to be, and the acharyas explains very specific why he said, goma lata oshadinam. He prayed, and it says here in some future birth, he doesn't even say now, he said in some future birth, let me be a plant. Not even mobile, I'll be immobile, I can't even move. Because if I was an animal, at least I could hear the gopis' ankle bells, or I could see them with my eyes, and I could go to them. I could stay near them and listen to their talks, or watch them with Krishna, or I could get so much training and so much association, I could nibble on their crumbs and remnants after they leave the kunj, After they leave the Kunja, they leave the Bhogvedi, where they're all taking prasad, or I can go and nibble on a few crumbs of Radharani's Maha Prasad and benefit myself. He's not even asking, he said, oh, I'm too rich now, and I don't even deserve that. Let me, because a plant can't eat the remnants, and a plant can't really see or hear, or they say that they hear with their roots or something, trees. But this is to the extent of his amazement that they're so high, like Mount Everest, and I'm a mosquito, and I pray that I become a creeper. He said, a goma lata oshadi. So what he's saying is, these are three different kinds of plants. So the goma is a type of, it kind of crawls along the ground. It's a plant that grows very close to the ground. Then the lata climbs the tree, you know, wraps around the tree, the lata, the creeper. Then the oshadi is just a bush. So he didn't pray to become any tall tree, because if he was a tall tree, then he wouldn't be able to get the dust of the Charnarenu. He's saying, Asamaho Charnarenu Jusam. So, but if he's a plant lying on the ground, there's a good chance that the gopis are going to step on him when they go, if they wander off the hither and thither path. And he's not on the main road, because if he's on the main road, then he'll surely get the dust of their feet. And definitely will get the dust of their feet, and they'll get benefited. But he doesn't feel deserving. He says, I don't deserve to immediately get the benefit. So let me be on a hither and thither path. And if by chance, when they hear Krishna's flute and they go a little mad, because I've seen their madness, I've seen Radharani's madness, and I've witnessed their madness and separation. So there's also separation even when Krishna's there. So if I take birth as a creeper on the ground, or a lata around a tree, or a small medicinal bush, like oshadi means a small shrub that doesn't grow more than a few feet. And this way, if they wander off the paths, they'll step on me, and the dust of their feet will come on me when they're in the madness of separation. They'll be diverted from the path that they're walking on. So this all comes about by association, this type of humility and this type of mood. In Sharanagati, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, stating, when one carefully follows all the that's what he's saying. When one carefully follows the six activities of Sharanagati in association with Krishna's devotees, then Bhakti Devi, the great goddess of devotion, will come and reside in the heart. So he's, because we're discussing Sadhusanga in relation to Namakari Bahuda Nija Sarva Shaktis, and there's three verses, 18, 19, and 20.
Which just, I think maybe it's okay. That was pretty good doctor. Thanks. Brahmins touched. It's told in Purana, says, if you have a headache, you lie on the ground and have a Brahmin put his foot on the back of your neck, and your headache will go away. Or he takes a little water in his mouth and he gargles with it, and he puts that saliva on your forehead, and a fever will go away also. Sounds wild, right? I heard this from Krishna Balaram Swami. He's a Brahmin, Brijvasi Brahmin. His father was a Vaidya and a Pandit. He knew all about these things. And he once himself in Berkeley got a headache. And he asked me to do that, those two things. I said, you crazy? I mean, I'm Mlechen Yavana. You may turn into a donkey or something. He said, what can I do? I have this intense headache and I'm far away from India. And you're the closest thing I can find to a Brahmin around here. You're the closest thing I can find to a Brahmin around here, and you are my godbrother. So Prabhupada has made a miracle here. Turned a mouse into a tiger. So therefore, you're the one. So I was very reluctant, but I eventually had to surrender and do the needful. It's quite an interesting experience. I'm sure you won't remember it if I ever bring it up. nowadays. You remember the day? No, I don't. Never happened. Right? We tend to forget embarrassing scenes in our lives. No. We only remember the times when we were excelling in greatness, and we don't remember the times when we were absolute abject fools. Our mother and fathers and relatives can point those foolish times out to us. Oh, really? I did that? Oh, I didn't do that. We only remember the great, oh, I was so great. I won that trophy and I won the award and this and that. So Maya is a very tricky dealer. She covers us with forgetfulness of all the important things. So in relation to this principle of sadhusanga, which is very much contained within Nam Namakari Bahuda, Nijasarva Shakti, Bhaktivinoda Thakur cites three verses which are, some are quite familiar. Text 18, the six kinds of association that nourish bhakti. These are the six ways of expressing friendship with devotees. Dadati patigrinati guryam akyati pritchati bhunte bojayate cheva shadviram priti lakshanam. Giving and accepting gifts, revealing the mind in confidence, making confidential inquiries, giving invitations to share meals, and accepting similar invitations. These are the six ways of showing affection. And then in Bengali, Adana Pradana Prite Guda Alapan Aha Ahara Bhojanchaya Sangya Lakshan Sarura Sahitya Sange Bhakti Vridihai Abhakta Asat Sange Bhakti Hayakshai. Bhaktivinoda says, the six activities of affectionately giving and receiving, engaging in confidential conversations, eating and giving food, are characteristic of any kind of association. If you do these activities with devotees, then devotion increases. And similarly, if you do these activities with non-devotees, then devotion will diminish. It's very interesting. You give gifts to non-devotees. Affectionately, we say giving gifts, and he says adana pradana priti guda alapana. He says affectionately giving and receiving. It doesn't say what, it just says giving and receiving with affection. This verse describes the visible symptoms of the affection that nourishes devotion. Bhakti manifests by associating with Krishna's devotees. One should never keep company of and reciprocate with sense enjoyers or persons who desire liberation. Bhakti will be destroyed by the fault of associating with them. One should also not hear anything from them about the confidential aspects of bhakti, and one should not accept food that has been touched by them. That's the big, always so much talks about food. It's very, this is that verse from Ante Lila. Ante Lila, chapter 6, 278. This is Mahaprabhu, I believe he's speaking. This is to Raghunath Das Goswami. Hare Govinda. Hare Krishna. Hey, Krishna Govinda. Vishaya anavele malina hayaman malina amana hayle nahi Krishna asman. I was mentioning this verse earlier. When one eats food offered by a materialist, then one's mind becomes contaminated. Vishayira ana malina hayaman malman. This is, you get, mal means dirt. You get dirty mind. One's mind becomes contaminated. When the mind is contaminated, one is unable to think of Krishna properly. Malina man hoile nahi Krishna smaran.
You can't do smaran. You maybe do hearing and chanting, but no smaran. And all three have to go together for result to manifest. And then text 19, similar point. Here, he's in the text 18, he's talking about sadhusanga, and these are the ways we should associate with sadhus. And in text 19, he's talking about avoiding that association. This is from Chaitanya Chandradaya Natak. And this is by Kavi Karnapur, is that right? Kavi Karnapur. Srimad Mahaprabhu has prohibited one from even seeing a sense enjoyer or a woman with a sensual objective. In other words, everywhere, for men, man is Maya, and for woman, for man, woman is Maya, and for woman, man is Maya. But the keynote here is we should not see the opposite sex with sensual objective. In other words, with the enjoying spirit, we will see millions of men, millions of women, wherever we walk in the world, especially in India, so populated. But we just see them as mothers, or as Prabhupada said in Nectar Devotion classes in Radha Damodar in 1972. A man should see all women. He said all women, whenever man sees a beautiful woman on the street or wherever, he should think they're gopis. They're gopis. They belong to Krishna. They're gopis, they belong to Krishna. They're meant to be engaged in Krishna's service. And I'm Krishna's servant. Gopi bhartu parakamalaya das anadas anadas. Therefore, I should engage them in Krishna's service. I should not try to enjoy them, because they're gopis. They're Krishna's energy. So therefore, members of the Krishna conscious movement should try to engage all beautiful women in the service of Krishna. This is what Prabhupada said. A very nice quote. I once had it printed out. Sometimes people print out nice quotes. I printed it out and gave it out to a few brahmacharis. I said, this should be your mold your thinking like this. Because this is the insight of our acharya, and it's right in line with our siddhanta in terms of Rupanuga Vaishnavism. Because this is called Anukalina Krishna Anushilam. No, it's called, what is it called? Anukalina. What is it? Accept those things that are favorable. Sankalpa. Anukalina Sankalpa. To accept those things which are favorable for our goal in life, which is Radha Krishna Bhakti. So in the Dharma Shastras, it's telling the Varna Dharma and the Ashram Dharma. So it's telling there the Brahmachari Ashram Dharma that he should see, or even the intelligent, the educated man, he should see all women, all ladies of female gender, women in the world as mother, even if they're younger in age to him. Like he may have a brother, and then his brother's married and has a daughter. So that daughter is his, I guess, his niece or whatever. And he's like 30 and she's like 10 or something. He should call her Mataji. It sounds strange. They call her usually Beti or whatever, daughter. They're supposed to call, a man is supposed to address every woman as Mataji except his wife. Wife is not Mataji. So, and then from the other side, the woman is supposed to see that all the men are like Prabhu, I think, something like that, Prabhu. So if you take it from the other side, Prabhupada's not saying, but if men are supposed to see that all women in the world are gopis, the energies of Krishna, they belong to Krishna, then women, they should see all men, oh, they're all gopas. You know, this is the converse. If this is the way the man should see the women as gopis, which means residents of Vrindavan, so then the women should, oh, they're gopas, they belong to Krishna, they're Krishna's energy. They're meant to serve Krishna and play with Krishna and wrestle with Krishna. They're not meant to play with me and wrestle with me. I should leave them alone, you know. Leave my eyes off them, and you know, right? Because Prabhupada was only addressing what the man should think, but women also have to think correctly, also, isn't it? Because the enjoying spirit is there in every jiva, irregardless of gender. So that is a very nice. So this is a verse. Niskinshanasya Bhagavad Bhajanam Mukhasya Paramparam Jigamashur Bhavasagarasya Sandarshanam Vishayanam Ata Yoshitam Cha Ha Hanta Hanta Vishabhakshanatopya Vasadu. Mahaprabhu greatly lamented, saying, Prabhupada liked this verse very much, especially the first line he would quote, first two lines. Niskinshanasya Bhagavad Bhajanam Bhajanam Mukhasya. Mahaprabhu said, alas, ha, ha hanta, hanta, alas, alas, for a renunciate who is devoted to Bhagavad Bhajan, in other words, Niskinchan, it means a renunciate, who is Bhagavad Bhajan, Mukhasya, in other words, his mukha, his face is supposed to be absorbed, his face and mouth and eyes and mind and brain and everything to do with his face, Bhajan Mukhasya, supposed to be absorbed in Bhagavad Bhajan. For a renunciate who is devoted to Bhagavad Bhajan and who desires to cross the ocean of material existence, Bhavasagarasya, it is worse to see sense enjoyers and women than it is to drink poison. That's a real good verse. But you just changed the gender. You know, if I was a woman and I was reading this, I wouldn't think, oh, this is chauvinistic. Lord Chaitanya is a chauvinist. He's down on women. He's like every other. You know, they have this idea. But rather, this, because as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati very clearly and beautifully describes how everyone is female, the only male is Krishna. Even Nanda Maharaj and Balaram, they're also female. They're all in the mode of Prakriti Bhav. Prakriti Bhav, or female, means to be enjoyed or to be the servant. So in a spiritual world, everyone, Radharani and Nanda Maharaj, and even if they're in male forms, they're all in Prakriti, they're all female. He said that souls are all female. All female. Prakriti. Prakriti, Seva. And Krishna is the enjoyer, the male, being the Purusha. Purusha and Prakriti. There's one Purusha in everything, and everyone in everything is Prakriti. Even if they're exhibiting male forms, Nanda Maharaj is not a Purusha. Balaram is not a Purusha. He's experiencing Sevananda, Krishna's Kaviraj says. He's absorbed in Seva in so many, every possible way he can imagine. He expands himself into this or that, to shoes, to slippers, to beds, to snakes, to anything, to serve Krishna. As a friend, as a parent, as a lover, any way and form and shape and expression that he can do to serve Krishna, he does. That's Prakriti Bhava. Absolute service and surrender. That's Balaram. And that's Nityananda, and that's Guru Tattva, and that's Shishya Tattva. The guru becomes qualified to be a guru because he has the most seva bhava. He has the most mood of being a servant of the servant, therefore he's qualified to be a guru and teach others how to be gurus, or how to be proper devotees by being servant of the servant. Because that's Balaram. Balaram is Guru Tattva. And Nityananda. So the guru represents Nityananda. So what is Nityananda? What is Balaram? Servant of the servant of the servant. Isn't it? So a lady who reads this verse will say, it's worse to see sense enjoyers in a man than it is to drink poison. Isn't it? That's what I would do if I read it. Or you can say that Lord Chaitanya is just not, he's only instructing men. He's only telling men to, he's only teaching men, and he's not paying much attention to the women. Yoshitam cha. Sandarshanam. Sandarshanam vishayinam atta yoshitam cha. Ha hant, ha hant, hant. Vishabhakshanato vasadu. Oh, that's very nice. That's part of the whole Vedic culture. That would be how to behave as a woman would be learned from babyhood. You know, but we learn everything opposite. You know, the men aren't trained to be proper chaste men, and the women aren't trained to be. You know, that's a good point. What the women can learn from this is behave in such a way, or dress in such a way, or move in such a way to keep the temperature down, you know, the social atmosphere
pressure. Like they talk about the weather, the atmospheric pressure is dropping. There's a low pressure zone coming in now, and we expect a change in weather. But when the Mayapur Vrindavan festival hits Vrindavan, or when the Kartik festival, there's a high pressure zone comes in, a lot of hot air comes blowing in the front door of the Krishna Balaram temple. All these ladies come shopping, and then also, it's like a shopping market, like a meat market or something, fish market. The men are fishing and the women are fishing. The men are all dressed up really nice, iron kurtas and nice tilak, and put a lot of coconut oil on their sikas and stuff. And then the women are dressed in all their new saris, make sure they show their belly buttons and stuff. And it's really important. Belly buttons are important to see. And then anything else that might be, interesting. And the brahmacharis, they sit on the steps of Prabhupada's samadhi like crows or something. and then these fish swim by, and then the crows fly up the steps and pick the fish up out of the water. The white waters of the marble promenade. The white waters of the marble promenade. Isn't it? Some of the fish have migrated to Govindakund. And they've entered deep under the green waters of Govindakund. They can't even be seen under there. Because the water is green, it's full of junk, you can't see. So that some fish are hiding over there. Right? We heard some fish are over there. And that's a very good place, because you can't... If some duck or some, those baka, they come and they don't go fishing over there because it's so green and so thick and you can't see in the water if there's any fish there. So it's a very good place. So this persons who desire to cross... So this is about... This verse is about sadhusanga. In other words, if we... associate with sadhus, that's very good for us. But then we turn around after we leave the sadhus and we go and associate with sense enjoyers, men or women, then it very much washes away the effect of the sadhu sangha. So this is what Lord Chaitanya is trying to establish here. That it's not very good. We should try to avoid it at all costs. Sometimes we can't, but as much as possible. And this last verse on sadhu sangha, it's from Upadeshamrita. So we heard verses about, we heard description about the quality of sadhu sangha, what can happen by associating with sadhus. Then we heard something about how we should associate with them, the six loving exchanges with sadhus, to affectionately relate to them and receive their affection and inquire from them and receive gifts, and the six different exchanges which are nectar devotion. And then we're associating with sadhus, so we have to be careful, because we want to get the benefit from the sadhus and the blessings and the bhakti and instructions on bhajan and the reflection of their hearts. But we have to be careful that we don't measure them or weigh them or judge them by our eyesight or by our external viewpoint. And we're warned against that. There are only 11 instructions in Nectar Instruction by Rupa Goswami. And they're all, of course, very deep and vast meanings of each one. But one of them is about judging a Vaishnava. And the whole principle of judging this is, you see in every religious pursuit, this idea is there. Because when one begins to judge and measure, then one invariably becomes critical, overly critical, or becomes envious, or tends to make fault, or diminish, and then he insults or makes offense, and then he actually loses the grace of God. Because the grace of God literally comes before each one of us as the saintly person. So even Jesus, thousands of years ago, he only had some very famous statements. One of them is, "Judge not, lest ye be judged." In other words, avoid this judging tendency. That we don't. We should rather always appreciate. We should. Bhaktisiddhanta was telling once. He had this practice that he would do sometimes. It was a type of ishtagosti, where he knew the nature and behavior of the different devotees in his temple. So he would have this ishtagosti, and he would say, and he knew that Chaitanya Das and Krishna Das had a rivalry. And they were envious about each other over different issues, and one was a better singer, but the other was a better mridanga player, and this kind of, these kind of temple ego rivalries and whatnot. So during ishtagosti, you say, Krishna Das, so you can stand up. Yes, Guru Maharaj. So I want you to say something, you can tell us something about the good qualities of Chaitanya Das. So then he would say, Chaitanya Das. He's very fortunate because he's taking shelter from your divine grace, and he's born in Navadvipa Mandal in a Brahmin family. And then Bhaktisiddhanta says yes. He's trying to, because he wants him to, because he's anybody, the postman can say these things. These are all known. These are like Gotra and Janam and well known to everyone. But he wants him to be more specific in relation to his service, and then Bhaktisiddhanta would encourage that Krishna said, anything else you can say? Well, Guru Maharaj, I don't know him very well. They're living together for 10 years, right? And then he says, really? Are you sure? And then say, well, actually, he knows a few bhajans. He's like the best singer that ever came to the Gaudiya Math, right? In terms of devotion and rag and dal. Only a few bhajans? And then Krishna says, actually, Guru Maharaj, he's really a very good kirtanier. Really, really good. Like this. And so, in this way, he would train his disciples to see the good in each other and to appreciate and learn to value the good qualities of their surroundings, rather than belittle or measure or judge in a negative way. Rather, the idea that he was saying, he said that we should take each devotee that we're associating with, because we don't know so many, but each devotee we're associating with or living with, even our own husband, wife, whatever, and we should put them on a pedestal. Pedestal means like a pillar. Like sometimes we have a stamba, and then we put a tulsi on top of it. It's like a pillar, and we put tulsi on top, or a flower vase, or whatever. So we should have this rather stout and firm pillar, or they call pedestal, and we should take each devotee, okay, temple president. Let me put the temple president on top of the pedestal, as if he's being honored. It's like a trophy. He's being honored. He's being worshipped. Oh, he is very honorable. The temple president, and we should put him on a pedestal and start to count the ways and think of the different ways why he's worshipful and what is good about him. Oh, he's temple president. He's good for nothing. No, temple president. He's good with the money. He doesn't waste Prabhupada's money. And then gradually it takes a long time to get rolling until you can really say something. And eventually it will avoid this Tristye Sabhava Janateya Vapu Shastra Deo Share. Na Prakrit Tattvam Iha Bhakti Janasya Pashit Gangamba Samna Kalu Bhuva Vrathena Pankya Brahma Javatam Apagachi Apagachati Niradharame. This is about the foam, and the Ganges may have foam, but it's still pure. So devotees who are in the material world should not be considered material. One should not consider them ordinary jivas. Imperfections seen in their natures, such as birth in a low caste, harshness, or laziness, and imperfections seen in their bodies, such as ugly features, disease, or deformities, are precisely like the appearance of bubbles, foam, and mud in the Ganga. Despite such apparent pollution of her water, the Ganga retains her nature as liquefied transcendence. Similarly, one should not attribute material defects to self-realized Vaishnavas. That's a translation of that verse from Upadesha. That's another translation of the verse from Upadeshamrita. And now this is the translation of Bhaktivinoda's. It is improper to consider pure devotees to be material or to see material defects in them. It is possible that they may have defects in their bodies or natures, but it is impossible for pure devotees to fall into bad association or commit nama-parad. The water of the Ganga is considered to be pure despite the appearance of bubbles, foam, and mud. For its nature as liquid transcendence is never lost. Similarly, self-realized Vaishnavas are not contaminated by the birth of the material body, nor by the deterioration or breakdown. Therefore, one who is intent on performing bhajan should never disrespect a pure Vaishnava, even if these defects are apparent in them. If someone looks for them, he becomes an offender. There was a great rishi in the Vedic times. His name is Ashtavakra Muni. Very, very powerful. But he was bent, his body was bent in eight places, Ashtavakra. We have Trivakra, was another name for Kubja in Mathura, Trivakra. Because she was hunchbacked, her back was bent, her neck was bent, her head, her back, her legs were bent over until Krishna adjusted her or touched her, and then she became very beautiful. So she was bent in three places, but Ashtavakra was bent in eight places. So he walked all bent over, and his one arm was like this and like that. And sometimes people would laugh at him, at his deformity. And he was very powerful, immense tapubalam. So then he would curse them. You become a fly or cockroach or whatever. And the people would just turn into a fly. And he was very powerful. So he came to Braj. And he went to Kusum Sarovara. And he sat in Kusum Sarovara and did bhajan on the west side, facing east. Which is, you have to be on the west side to face east. So I could look at Kusum Sarovara and take bath there. And then remembering, thinking of Krishna's pastimes over there as Keshava and other pastimes, then he gave up his body on the banks of Kusum Sarovara. So there's a small memorial there on the west side, Kusum Sarovara, and inside you see a carving of a yogi sitting in Padmasana. And the rumor, the story is that this figure represents Ashtavakra Muni. So this lesson of this sixth verse of Upadeshamrita is very much a lesson for living in Vrindavan. Because Vrindavan is a melting pot of Vaishnavas and Vaishnavis, and all ages, all nationalities, all genders, I mean the two genders, but all types of forms. And we should always be very careful to check our mind and to see the transcendental quality of all the people. We were on the Parikmate, and then Dangati, and it was a big, so crowd of people. Then I was just looking, and all of a sudden in front of me I see one lady on the ground, old lady, gray hair, bony, skinny. She's maybe 70 or 5 or something. And her legs were all, didn't work. She had legs, but they were just hanging on the ground. And she had two little, looked like little handles made of wood. You know, and she was just dragging her rear end, like hopping along on her rear end on the ground with these two little wooden handles so she wouldn't wear on her hands. She was holding the wood, and the wood was curved like this, like two C's, like, and then you hit the ground and she held it, like two handles, but a little long. So had legs on them, so she would, those would hit the ground instead of her hands all the time. So she was holding the wood in like mini crutches, you could say. And like little crutches, like doing. And because her legs didn't work, she couldn't walk, couldn't stand. She was just moving on her rear end, and her legs were just kind of, she was just, her legs were kind of folded like in a lotus. And she was just, she had legs. I've seen people without legs also. And she was moving like that. And when I, and she was doing Parikrama of Govardhan. You know, I'm more, you know, my legs. No, it's really, you know, and I saw it and it just like really struck my heart. How many different kinds of people here in Braj? And then immediately because I always want to have some money with me to give for donations here and there. So then I just, because in Shastra it tells who you should give money to. So one is old people, anyone who's sick, anyone who's, no matter what the age, anyone who's sick, anyone who's hungry, genuinely hungry, any old person, man or woman, any Brahmin, obviously, any Brahmin, any Vaishnava, or crippled or deformed people, these are suitable candidates for charity. One gets benefit. So immediately I thought, oh, I should give her something, but I only had a couple hundred rupees, so I just went down. But I wanted to see her face, because I couldn't see her. She was down on the ground, you know. So then, there's so much crowd all around. I was right at Don Gatti. It's a good place to give a don, right? It was right before that, the inside path, and then by the time I caught up, because so much crowd, I thought I had to give her a donation. By the time I thought that, she had scooted up the road towards the Don Gatti. Then I found her, and then I bent down, you know, to eye to eye with her, rather than just standing, oh, here's some money. You know, she wasn't begging, but I was begging. She wasn't begging, but I was. So I bent down, so I crouched down, so I was eye to eye with her, because I wanted to see her face and look into her heart and see if I could find something, some treasure there to put in my treasure box. So then I bent down, I looked at her, and such a face she had, and so much nice eyes, because she's always, you know, bathing in a Brajaraj and seeing the feet of the Vaishnavas. That's her viewpoint, that's all she sees. The dust of Braj and the feet of the Vaishnavas, that's a pretty good thing to keep your eyes on. I mean, I'm always looking, you know, from the belly button up. You know, when I'm looking at the world, I'm looking from the belly button up, right? Nari Stanabara Navidation, Trispamago Navidation. You know, I'm looking like this, so then that's a danger zone, you know, to look from the belly button up, especially if you're looking at women or, you know, this. But imagine if I was only 18 inches up. This lady's head was about 12 inches off the ground. So if she looks up, she sees knees. Like Lakshman, when Ram said, well, what was Sita wearing when she got taken with Ravana? He said, I don't know, I never looked above her ankles. Lakshman never looked above the ankles of Sita for 14 years. He looked at her ankles for 14 years, never looked at. So I looked in this lady's eyes and I said, no, I said, please, this is for you. I just said it in English. And she looked at me, so nice. And I said, Radhe Radhe. I just looked at her, I had the money, I said, Radhe Radhe. And she looked at me, I said, Radhe Radhe. It's like, oh, it's just that Radhe Radhe was, you know. You know, she gave $1 million Radhe Radhe for 100 rupees, you know. So it's a pretty good deal. Because everyone's saying Radhe Radhe, that Rickshaw Lala is saying Radhe Radhe, give me money. Sit in my rickshaw, Radhe Radhe, give me money. The Kapilwala is saying Radhe Radhe, buy my sari. You know, that sari Radhe Radhe and rickshaw Radhe Radhe. But this Radhe Radhe was something, you know, it was coming from the dust of Vrindavan. It was coming from the feet of the Vaishnavas. It was coming from her world. That's the world that she lives in. The world, the dust of Vrindavan is her world, her world view. They say, oh, what's your world view? Well, that's all the external world she can see is the dust of Vrindavan, the footpaths of Govardhan, the dust of Vrindavan, and the feet of the Vaishnavas, the Yatris. So it was a nice, so it was very much like this. If I think, oh, she, so we can, pure devotion may be contained in the most unattractive form. Because in the material world, packaging is everything. Without packaging, you can't sell your product. So basically, they sell the packaging, not the product. And they make something really well packaged, and it's inside is junk. And advertising packaging is a big part of material consumerism. To sell something, but Vaishnava, pure bhakti, and pure devotion is oftentimes in the most unattractive package. is what Rupa Goswami is telling. Pure bhakti may be in the most unappealing, unattractive package, but we should purchase it wherever we find it and not offend it, not discard it or disregard it. So I think that's the end of today's class and the end of the teacher also. Is there any questions? So when we finally, when we, you know, it's try to always associate with sadhus, and when we do associate with sadhus, don't judge them and don't oh, his nose is funny or his this or that. Take the essence, be a saragrahi, essence seeker, seeker of essence, and the essence that we're seeking is attachment to Krishna, attachment to the holy name, and pure devotion to Radha and Krishna. This is the essence of devotion, and this is the heart of the Vaishnava. So we want to enter deeply into the heart of Vaishnava, not get tripped up and misled or bewildered by the external packaging, because often Vaishnavas are avadhuts. We have our Vamshidas Babaji, he was very much an avadhut. So externally he may seem like a madman and not look very attractive, not very polished, but Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati considered him the Param Mahabhagavat, and he would always try to get his food redness. His devotees, his disciples used to go and travel with him and or nearby, camp nearby, and go and try to get little remnants to bring back to Bhaktisiddhanta from Vamshidas Babaji. But the packaging was frightening, practically. Looked like some caveman or, you know, Neanderthal man or something, a Cro-Magnon. and behavior is strange, talking to his deities and throwing things and this and that. So any questions? Tomorrow we start with some more verses on Sadhu Sangha. We'll not finish this. No, I think we'll finish that. No, there's still a couple more verses. Anything?
Seems that one is has a tendency, it's very easy to fault find, just like in a car accident. You see someone who has, I mean, you see in highways in the West, there's a car accident, people, what they do is they slow down because they like to see someone in a more distressful situation. So this tendency of fault finding can be so easily prevalent in someone who's going to the cross of the American Rishi. So it seems the best way to counteract that is as even one maybe one may have those bad habits, but just simply focus on, at the same time, seeing the good qualities that are there. That's like the best way to counterbalance that.
Yeah, the pedestal program.
Yeah.
There's a famous phrase, I don't know where it comes from, but it's, we used it in one of our books. Every sinner has a future, and every saint had a past. Right? Valmiki, he was a hunter. Oh no, he was a robber. He was a robber, so he was a sinner, but he became a saint, and he wrote the Ramayana. So every sinner has a future. You know, every saint has a past or whatever. Jagai and Madai, they were sinners and then they became so great. So one may start off bad and end up good. We don't know. So we should try to see the good in others. And now the other thing is that if we see something in someone else, we should actually see that person's a mirror. Like if you look in the mirror, then all you see is yourself. Your nose, your eyes, and whatever is there in the mirror, it's you. It's your body. It's your being reflected. So when you see in the body of another person, oh, this person gets so angry at a little thing, he's so angry. Then you should think that actually you're looking in a mirror, oh, I also get angry. Mm-hmm. Anger is also, is there anger? He's getting so angry over a trivial thing. What is this? He should control himself. Shanti, shanti. But we should think, oh, is there anger in me? Do I have any anger? I'm seeing anger in this devotee. Is there, then we ask ourselves, is there any anger in me? Yeah, I also get angry. No, I am totally, I don't have a drop of anger in me. Oh, that's very good. If you didn't have any drop of anger, then you wouldn't be seeing like this. You know, because it takes one to know one, they say. So if we have anger, then we can see anger. But if only that our heart is full of love, one who fills his heart with love, if one who fills his heart with love, he will see love everywhere. So what we're seeing is actually only our own qualities. If we see bad qualities in others, they're actually our qualities that are either we're suppressing them, or we're thinking we don't have them, or we're almost free from them, but we have a little bit. Because if we were free from all bad qualities, which we may notice in others time to time, which we call fault finding, which means to become aware of or to see bad qualities or faults in others, if we actually ourselves have become free from all bad qualities and faults, then the result of that will be that we will no longer see the faults and qualities in others. So the proof that we still have, that we ourselves are still the abodes of many faults and bad qualities, is the fact that we are seeing faults and bad qualities in others. You understand the logic of this? Oh, you know, this is what he's like. You know, this is what I saw in temple. He's like this, and this other guy's like that, and this guy's like this. Acha. And what about you, my dear sir? Oh, me? I mean, you know, I'm a demigod. You know, I've specially taken birth in Bombay just to, you know, show you the example of pure devotion. Acha. Okay, thank you very much. I'm glad you're amongst us. So we're all, as Prabhupada said, we're all in the hospital. Probably want to use this analogy. Somebody has a cough, somebody is in traction, somebody's in a full body cast, somebody just got their leg amputated, but everyone's in the hospital having different degrees of repair and recuperation. And some, hey, oh, look, you got your leg cut off. What are you talking about? You just had, you know, you just had your throat cut off because of cancer or something, you know. Wet stool laughing at dry stool. That's you know that analogy? You probably use that analogy. You know that one?
Yeah.
It's good in a village. Until you come to India, you can't really appreciate half of Prabhupada's analogy.
Yeah.
I mean, the analogies are from Shastra, most of all of them. Wet stool laughing at dry stool. And if you don't know what it means, ask one of your friends. Mm-hmm.